Welcome in to the Indiana Basketball Source Podcast. I'm Trevor Andershock. We'll be joined by Jeff the Shark Shanley once again today. We're going to recap our regional predictions, see how those went, and then dive into the semi-state round here coming up Saturday. There's only four teams left in each class fighting for that state championship. At the end of the podcast, me and Jeff also dove into the Indiana Junior All-Star selections. We didn't quite do it the same way that the actual squads will be announced, but we took our top 14 selections and went one by one for who we wanted on the team. So it should be a very good podcast. There should be a ton of very good content in this podcast. All right, let's welcome Jeff Shanley to the podcast once again.
Well, welcome back into the Shark Tank, Trevor.
You ready to get this started?
Let's get it going.
All right, might as well take a look at how our predictions fared last week. I think it was a much better week for both of us. Especially for me there, Shark. I edged you by one, 12 wins to 11 wins.
And I edged you by one in the sectional, so now we're tied up overall.
Yep, we're both, I worked this out, 51 and 29 each. Coming down the stretch here, Shark.
That'll get you about a 3 seed in the Eastern Conference and about a 7 seed in the West, Trevor.
With that, let's see. We both missed the Martinsville Regional. I went with Tinley. You went University.
Yep.
We both went Southwestern down in Paoli, where Forest Park won. And we both went Crispus Attucks in the Greencastle Regional.
Chris Hawkins, we're talking to you right now.
Yeah, we've got to call him out for that. But other than that, I thought it was pretty good. No, I don't think there was really any upsets other than that Martinsville-Morristown.
Yeah, and then but you look at Morristown, I mean, they've had a heck of a year. Obviously, they get a special performance from Hayden Langcable in that game.
Yeah, scoring 46 is usually pretty good. Yeah, other than that, things went according to our plan, at least. I don't know about other people's.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's swing our focus over to the semi-state. Let's get through our predictions and previews here, Shark.
All right, we'll start off at the 1A level, go up north. 4 p.m. on Saturday at Huntington, Fort Wayne Blackhawk Christian taking on Southwood. Two teams, Trevor, that I think, you know, looking at the to start the tournament, I think we both kind of predicted these two teams to meet at this point, and here they are.
Yeah, two really, really good teams, and not just for 1A, just overall good teams. You can move these guys up a class or two and they would still be probably deep in the tournament. I saw Southwood earlier in the sectional against Lafayette Central Catholic. Just so tough. I mean, skill across all five positions with Peyton Trexler, Carson Blair, Matthew Nose, Dallas Holmes. That whole group, I mean, is really, really tough. But they're going to have their hands full with this Blackhawk Christian team. Caleb First had a great regional. He had 32 in that regional final against 21st Century. So I don't know how Southwood combats Blackhawk's size, especially First.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, you look at Southwood and you talk about if you bump them up a class. Southwood's only losses to Wapahani, first game of the year, a really good 2A team. Huntington North, who was a sectional finalist in 4A by 3 points. So Southwood started out the year 0-2. Their only loss since then has been a road loss at Oak Hill in overtime, who we're going to talk about in a little bit, playing in the 2A semi-state. And then Blackhawk Christian, their only two losses on the year have been to 4A SAC schools, Northside and Bishop Dwenger. So you see what they've done against teams in 1A and even in 2A as well. They've been pretty dominant. I think the biggest question, obviously, is how are you going to combat the size of Caleb First? And when First isn't in there, you have Drake Thompson and Jared Hofer coming in to spell them. Also, you know, bigger, maybe not as skilled as First, but bigger bodies in there. And this isn't, I don't think, the typical game where one team has great guards, the other team has great bigs, so the team with guards tries to pressure and turn the other team over because you have people, you know, Jalen Mall is one of the better point guards in the state for Blackhawk Christian. I don't think he's going to be phased by a lot of pressure.
Yeah, and if you extend full court, you can put Frankie Davidson in the middle with his size at a good 6'4", and break it that way too. So, yeah, that will be an interesting matchup there. Also, I mean, we're talking about the size for Blackhawk. Southwood's not a deep team. I think they only played really six guys against Lafayette Central Catholic when I saw them. So if they get any foul trouble, you know, three fouls in the first half or something, I think that would put them in a really bad spot.
Yeah, and, you know, you like their guard combination of Peyton Trexler and Carson Blair, but is that going to be enough? Like you said, Mull, Frankie Davison, Caleb First, just a lot of different pieces to roll with for Blackhawk.
Yeah, obviously they dominated that regional too, so they're feeling pretty good right now coming into this matchup, Shark.
Yeah, I was not expecting to see them hang 100 on Gary 21st Century and win by 30. I definitely expected that to be a little bit closer than that.
Yeah, that was an impressive performance looking at the box score. Didn't see any tape, but pretty impressive following the updates there, Shark. But who are you going to pick in this one? Are you going to go with your Fort Wayne bias here and take Blackhawk Christian?
I think it's not bias, you know. I mean,
well, you have a natural Fort Wayne bias, but maybe not in this case.
Somebody's got to be biased for Fort Wayne because everybody else is biased against us.
Ah, there we go.
I think this is one time where Blackhawk's schedule really plays into their factor. They've been tested. They've seen people with better guards than Southwood has, nothing to take away from Blair and Trexler. But I just think this is why they play that schedule, to be tested come March. So I'm going to go ahead and take Blackhawk Christian to get ready for another state finals trip, bringing it back to State Boulevard.
Yeah, I'm really tempted to go with Southwood here. That would be an upset pick, but man, so tough to go against Blackhawk, especially the way they played last weekend. I'm going to just have to go with the favorites here. Go with Blackhawk Christian to win it, Shark.
All right, so we're both on the train with Blackhawk representing 1A North. We'll head down to the south. The first game at Seymour starting at 1 p.m. on Saturday. Bar Reeve, the Vikings, taking on the Yellow Jackets of Morristown. This is going to pit one of the better defensive teams in the state in Brian Hughes' Vikings squad against one of the highest scoring guards in the state, Morristown's Hayden Langcable. It's not just a one-man show for Morristown.
No, you got Logan Laster and Eli Schriel also, but I mean, I think you have to have a huge performance there from Hayden Langcable.
Yeah, and we've certainly seen he's capable of it, obviously dropping 46 on Tinley last weekend. I went and saw them play Shelbyville, and he hung 37 on a good Shelbyville team. It's got some quality guards, the Lewis twins, Josh Williams, Zach Coons. So he's able to score. It's amazing to see somebody put up those numbers without really a reliable perimeter shot. He just has so many ways to finish around the basket creatively, knife in between people. He just sees gaps that not many others can get to.
Almost a throwback shooting guard where he's slashing more than actually shooting.
Yeah.
He's getting to the basket on a regular basis, no matter the competition, too. We saw an AAU playing against better athletes, and he was still able to get to the basket or the lane and finish. So Bar Reeve will definitely have their hands full. I know Gabe Gladish has been playing well for him.
They have some size in Keegan O'Neill inside, which could affect Langcable's ability to finish.
Yeah. He's not a true shot blocker. He's not going to get up and, you know, be above the square or anything. But that size and strength can, you know, wall up and give him some tough shots in there. But overall, got to like Morristown after going through that tough regional there, Shark.
Yeah, I mean, I've been impressed with Morristown. Like I said, I saw one of their only two losses on the year. They got a special performance from Langcable that night. Logan Laster and Eli Strebel kind of had, I guess, off games. But I think this is a situation where you're riding a hot hand in Langcable. You know, it's going to be very tough for Bar Reeve to be able to get ready for somebody with this kind of creativity off the dribble. I think Eli Strebel and Logan Laster, like you said, step up. They're going to have to find ways to combat Bar Reeve's size, keep them off the offensive backboards. But I'm going to go ahead and take Morristown to move on to state.
Yeah, looking at Bar Reeve's schedule here, it doesn't look like they've seen too many guards like Langcable. Maybe a Paxson Bartley at Wood Memorial is the closest guy they've played that likes to slash, good athlete, and finish at the rim. And they did a good job against him. But, yeah, like you're saying, I think you got to ride Morristown, getting through that tough regional field. I think Langcable is going to have enough to get over Bar Reeve. I'll take Morristown, Shark.
Yeah, and we were talking about this, too, just before we started. Varif's kind of living dangerously. They had a three-point win over Orleans in the sectional, a one-point win against Ligoti in the sectional title game, then a one-point win against Christian Academy in the regional title game. For a team with their record, their average winning margin is less than 9 points per game. So they play it kind of close. Could this be a situation?
And they like it to be low scoring. I think that kind of plays into the closeness of the game.
So they've been cutting it close so far, but I think we're both in agreement here. We're going to go ahead and take Morristown. We'll head on up to 2A North, the second game at Huntington, starting at 6. Pits the 28-1 Westview Warriors against the 24-5 Oak Hill Golden Eagles. This is really a matchup of really good guard play against a really big 2A lineup.
Yeah, I just saw Westview Saturday. They really just sliced and diced Canterbury, especially in the fourth quarter, getting layup after layup. Great passing ability. Really threw out their guards and wings, but Elijah Hales is their big one. He can really pass the ball. You don't see many passers at 6'2", his strong build, especially at like a 2A level. You'd think he'd be more of a 20-25 point a game scorer, but he really enjoys passing more than scoring, and then just scores when he has to for Westview.
Yeah, and we look at Oak Hill. Their shortest starter, 6'3". They have Tyce Frank, 6'4 point guard, going to Grace. And then front court tandem, Spencer Ballinger and Caleb Middlesworth going on to be teammates at Huntington University. Throw in David Aarons there as well. I think, you know, you might see a lot of zone, a lot of 2-3 from Oak Hill. I know Westview's not the greatest shooting team. Maybe trying to limit them off the dribble and back cuts and things like that.
Yeah, I think a zone here would be pretty effective. Westview, really not a great outside shooting team, and really doesn't look for it much. Charlie Yoder will take a three here or there, and Hales will take a three once in a while, but really they want to get to the rim, and you don't see it much anymore with how teams rely on the three-point line, but their offense will run inside of the arc sometimes as well, and that's like a 80s or 90s offense right there, Shark.
Yeah, old school Boston College flex under Al Skinner.
Yeah, get inside there. Yeah, that size and length for Oak Hill, that's going to take away a lot of those passing lanes that we were talking about before. Going to be interesting to see how Westview can score in this game.
Yeah. Interesting, though, I think Westview, maybe not the size, but definitely has some ability to put some pressure on Oak Hill defensively if they want to. Oak Hill's got to be able to take care of the basketball and get it to Ballinger and Middlesworth and have them be able to control, because if the guards are throwing it all over the court, it could be a long night for Oak Hill.
And that's been one of Oak Hill's weaknesses for these past couple of years, where they've been really good with this core group, is turnovers, taking care of the ball. I do think Westview can pressure him a little bit, Hales, and those guys can get out and get into Oak Hill's guards. So that could be a huge key there, Shark.
I think it's time for predictions here. I'm going to go ahead and take Westview to come away with this one.
I didn't see that one coming there, Shark. You were hyping up Oak Hill pretty quick there.
Well, I think it's going to be a fantastic game there at Huntington on Saturday night. You know, you look at Westview, only loss has come by, I think, 1 or 2 points to a really good East Noble team, a 4A team. Oak Hill's had some bumps in the road. They lost to Franklin. They got blown out by a good Newcastle team. But they've kind of been on a roll here, so I think it's going to be really just a toss-up game, but I'm going to go ahead and take Westview.
I'm going to differ and go with Oak Hill. I do think their size, being able to pack it in, is going to really suffocate Westview's offense. And I think Oak Hill gets it done and gets to the state championship game, Shark.
Sounds good. Move on to the Southern 2A semi-state taking place at 4 o'clock at Washington in the Hatchet House. We have Cecina Memorial, the Crusaders, taking on the Rangers of Forest Park. This Cecina team, really guard-dominated. They're going to have to find an answer for Kurt Hall, kind of in the front court, but you talk about guards that are physically able to do a lot of damage. You're talking about Emmanuel Brown.
Yeah, you got Emmanuel Brown, real strong, explosive guard for Cecina. They've really had, you know, pretty good balance throughout the year with Brown, McKylan Brown, Kobe Clancy, Kobe Dillard. That whole group is, you know, sharing the scoring duties there for Cecina Sharks.
Yeah, I saw them against Addicts, and McKylan Brown had a huge game. You know, 6'1", 6'2", slasher, really finds a way to get to the rim. Kobe Diller can knock down outside shots. Kobe Clancy can do a little bit of everything.
Kind
of
good athlete.
Yeah, kind of jack of all trades. And Emmanuel Brown, like we said, just a bull in a china shop, really, if he wants to be. You don't see many guards, especially at the 2A level, that are built like him with shoulders, upper body strength, able to take contact. And then Forest Park, you know, kind of, I don't want to say lucky to be at this point, but they needed a buzzer-beating three to win the sectional. And then kind of cruised in the regional, beat South Knox and Austin by a combined 35 points. So after getting through a little scare, they kind of relaxed last weekend, had a little bit easier road. This should be an interesting matchup, kind of guards versus a little old-school Southern Indiana basketball.
Yeah, especially Sam Englert, about 6'4". You might be able to give him a 6'5", there, Shark, but really good athlete, likes to get to the rim. And I don't think Cecina has really any size, especially to guard him and Hope. I mean, that's two big guys that they have to worry about. How's Cecina going to rebound? I think that's the biggest question for me.
I mean, I think you're going to have to see Manuel McKylan Brown coming back. And obviously, being guard-dominated line, you say the guards have to rebound. But especially in this case, you're going to need Kobe Diller to put a body on somebody. You're going to need Manuel Brown to come out of his area and get rebounds. It's going to have to be a committee effort, I think.
Is Kobe Clancy the biggest guy they play there, Shark? I haven't seen
him. I mean, and that's not to say Kobe Clancy's big by any stretch of the imagination. But, I mean, yeah, that's probably it. They have a couple 6'3 kids they bring off the bench, but in terms of difference makers, Kobe's the biggest, but he's not a stoutly built kid at 6'2", 6'3". Yeah. So,
and really, Cecina likes to get to the rim more than take outside shots, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, you look at Manuel Brown, McKylan Brown, they're definitely getting to the rim. The game I saw, Kobe Clancy, I think, had 12 free throw attempts. Kobe Dillard, even though I think people see him as a shooter, he's definitely able with his build to kind of use his shot fakes and play off of those closeouts and to get to the rim. So, should be interesting to see how they finish against that type of size.
Yeah, and the flip side would be, can they get Forest Park in foul trouble by keep attacking the rim? If you can get Englert out of there, there goes a lot of their scoring ability. They really rely on him. I think he's up around 18 or 19 a game for him, Shark. So if you get him or Hope out of there, that would just be huge for Cecina.
Yeah, you're going to be an interesting matchup here, Trevor. Who are you gonna roll with?
Oh, man, this is another one you can almost flip a coin at. Even while we were talking there, I was kind of flipping back and forth between these two. I think in the end, I'm going to go with Forest Park. Because I think Englert and Hope stay out of foul trouble, make it tough on Cecina to score in the lane. And then, you know, we're really effective on the other end and score pretty efficiently. So I'm going to go Forest Park here, Shark.
I think I'm going to go ahead and take the Rangers as well. On this one, like you said, Englert and Hope just a little bit too much inside. Cecina has a penchant to kind of, I don't say fold, but they were up big on Crispus Addicts in the game. I watched them in the regular season. Addicts did not play well at all. Just out-hustled, out-man, and slowly but surely Addicts crept back into it using a big game from Derek Briscoe and was able to beat Cecina. You always got to worry about that is a situation where they get a big lead and teams start chipping away. Is that in the back of their mind that this has happened before? I know Rob New is going to have the kids ready, but I'm going to go with Forest Park as well.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting one. I can't wait to see what happens there, Shark.
All right, heading up to 3A North, the first game at Lafayette Jeff High School in the Crawley Center. You have Culver Academy taking on Newcastle. A lot of talent in this matchup. The guard duo from Culver of Ethan Britton Watts and Trey Galloway. Then you have Deontay Craig up front. And then the junior class at Newcastle, Luke Bumbleo, Mason Gillis, and also senior Nia Williamson on the perimeter. Which trio is going to get going, all three of them at the same time, and really be able to affect the outcome of this game?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see who guards Mason Gillis for Culver Academy series. Obviously, you'd think Deontay Craig gets it right away, but they also play Nick Heidel, about 6'5", 6'6", sophomore. Sometimes they start him, sometimes they bring him off the bench. That's at least a big body to maybe wear down Gillis at some point. Other than those two, I don't know who else they'd put on them if one of those guys gets in foul trouble or both of them get in foul trouble.
Yeah, and I think with Gillis, you know, he's so big, but he's definitely taken that next step to expand his game to the perimeter. He's really comfortable behind the arc now, whereas last year maybe hesitated on pulling the trigger. He's up around, I think, high 30s, maybe 40% plus on threes this year. And then obviously can do damage inside and on the glass with his motor. The key is, I think, is Luke Bumbleo going to be able to go off against the backcourt duo of Galloway and Britton Watts? He's a kid, can hit shots seemingly anytime, any place. If he gets in a role here, it could be a long night for Culver.
And both of those guys have a size advantage on them, too. So maybe not quite as quick as Bumbleo is, but they can use their length to get a hand in his face or, you know, push him off the three-point line, push him into a trap here or there once in a while, I think. But, yeah, I would assume Britton Watts will be on him a lot in that game. That'll be a fun game to watch. It's two 2019 kids going at it.
Yeah, I think another good matchup to watch is going to be Nia Williamson guarding Trey Galloway. Williamson at 6'2", long, good athlete. Obviously, their star quarterback on their football team. He's a three-year varsity player for Newcastle. He's been able to come through a lot, and he's going to get the tough matchup on Galloway. Is he going to be able to really take him out of his comfort zone and put some pressure on, maybe force some early misses from the sophomore?
Yeah, and it's big to keep him away from the basket, especially early. Don't let him get his rhythm by getting easy buckets. They'll throw some lobs to him early with some back cuts and stuff like that. So, got to be aware of Galloway getting off there early.
You think Deontay Craig can get Gillis in foul trouble? Because after, there's really nobody else inside for Gillis. I mean, Bumbleo, Williamson, and Gillis make up a whole lot of very high percentage of their scoring. If you get one of those guys in foul trouble, particularly Gillis, that takes away a lot of what Newcastle wants to do.
Yeah, I think the only way he gets in foul trouble is like a ticky-tack foul or some blocking on the perimeter, you know, not quite sliding over quick enough or something like that. I don't think he's going to get any fouls in the lane against this Culver team too much. So I really don't think Gillis will get in foul trouble in this one here, Shark.
All right. Well, I think we've talked about it enough. Let's go with the predictions. I'm going to go ahead and take Newcastle. I've been impressed a couple times I've seen them this year. It's really hard to hold one of Bumbleo and Gillis down. It seems like they just take turns being able to go on little runs of their own. You know, one of them seems to always have an 8 or 10-point quarter at least once in a game.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go ahead and take the Trojans to make it to Banker's Life.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because Culver really has more scoring options, but Newcastle's two scoring options are so good in Gillis and Bumbleo. So if one of those guys, you know, like you were saying, gets in foul trouble or anything like that, I think it really swings into Culver's favor. But all that being said, I'm still going with the Trojan Shark. I'm going Newcastle here.
Sounds good. We're in agreement there. So we're going to head down to the South 3A semi-state. 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central at the Hatchet House. Danville and Evansville-Bossy. These two teams don't seem to play similar styles at all. You have the rugged physicalness of Danville, and you have the lightning-quick playmaking backcourt of Evansville-Bossy.
Yeah, it really starts for Bossy with Makai Larry. Just an incredible scorer at, you know, generous, maybe 5'8", maybe 5'7", there, Shark. Obviously a great shooter as well, so you combine that shooting ability and quickness, and very few high school guys can guard him.
Yeah, and he's also unselfish enough to, when he does draw a double team, he's able to find teammates. Jalen Chin, the other backcourt mate, very productive for Bossy as well. And then you have Kyron Powell inside. Is he going to be able to kind of neutralize Alec Burton? You know, Burton's got definite strength advantage there, but is the length of Powell going to be able to bother Burton a little bit inside?
Well, the way you take that away is being physical and getting into the body of Powell, and Burton is not going to be afraid to be physical there, Shark.
No, that's one of the hallmarks of this Danville team, I think, is it almost seems like they enjoy just beating you up on the floor. You know, you start with him, but then you have Sam Comer, you have the rest of that crew out there. Just really 1 through 5, a physical, tough, tough-minded team. They're not afraid to grind out wins. They're not afraid to defend you. So, you know, they haven't lost since the end of January. They're playing really well right now. Beat a really good Beech Grove team by 15 in the sectional. Took out Attucks, the defending state champ, in the regional semifinals. So this is a team that, like you said, is not going to be afraid of and not going to back down from anybody.
Yeah, and along with Burton, I mean, you have pretty good balance, too. Anybody could step up for him. Like you mentioned, Sam Comer. When I saw him against Manuel, Austin Cohart stepped up pretty big for him. Connor Jones is really good. Dylan Ware. So, I mean, they have multiple options on any given night. One of those guys could go for 20.
Yeah, definitely. But I think, you know, we talk about any given night, Danville has somebody that can go for 20. On any given night, Bossy has somebody that can go for 40.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the X factor. If you get Makai Larry going early, I don't know if there's an off switch to push.
No, definitely not. And when you pair him with guys like D'Angelo Ware, Jalen Chin, and Jalen Minor, I mean, that's a lot of quickness, a lot of scoring ability. And I think they get after Danville in this one, create a lot of turnovers and get some easy buckets against them in the backcourt.
Yeah, this becomes a high-tempo, high-possession game that definitely favors Bossy. They are not afraid to run with people, and that's definitely the style they want to play.
Yeah. Yep. With that said, Shark, I'll throw out my prediction first here. I'm going to go with Bossy. I was thinking about maybe Danville if Burton can really take advantage of Paul inside and get him in foul trouble. But I think Bossy's going to be able to turn him over a lot and get some easy buckets. I think that ends up being the difference. So I'm taking Bossy, Shark.
I'm going to take Bossy as well. I just think too much offense. They can just simply outscore people. And it's going to come at Danville quick, I think. So I'm going to take Bossy as well in that matchup.
All right, let's head up to the old 4A there, Shark.
4A North, the second game at Lafayette Jeff. We have undefeated South Bend Riley taking on the Greyhounds of Carmel High School. This really is going to be a matchup of one team that loves to score and one team that loves to guard.
Yeah, and I just saw Riley in that the regional championship game against Elkhart Memorial. And although they were 25-0 at the time, they were down 11 at one point in the first half, Shark. In the first quarter, Eric Brand benched all the starters, brought in five reserves, tried to get their attention that way. But still, there's just a little bit of pressing from Demise Anderson, a little lack of focus from some other guys there. If they do that against Carmel, I think the Greyhounds put them away if you give them that that little advantage there, Shark.
Yeah, and we're kind of talking about this like we do the Southern 3A game we just talked about. Riley definitely going to want to play high tempo, high possession. Carmel, notorious for grinding things out, making you break defensively before they score. And I think Carmel's balance is really good. You look at Eddie Gill, starting guard for them, gets two fouls early on in their regional semifinal game against Homestead. That might have been the best thing that happened to Carmel, because they bring Jalen Wack off the bench and he scores 12 first half points. You have Cole Jenkins, John Michael Malloy, obviously. Luke Hetty. I really, really like the game of Andrew Owens, 6'5", 6'6". Can play inside and out, can shoot it. Definitely got a lot of versatility to his game. Who's going to be able from Riley to guard him? Because I think he's a kid that can, if he gets going, could string together a little run, get some separation. And once Carmel gets separation, they're a very difficult team to come back on.
Yeah, because they'll control the ball and waste clock and make their free throws, stuff like that, Shark.
But yeah. They have so many good ball handlers, and they're well coached. They have high IQs. It's going to be hard for Riley, even with their length and athleticism, to turn them over.
I think one big key here is how well is Carmel going to shoot it? Because when Carmel gets inside, Riley's got shot blockers, even from, you know, Shamar Diller loves to block shots. Demise Anderson had four against Memorial. Rylan Grundy, Marlon Taylor, Gabe Johnson, all those guys are really good athletes that will challenge at the rim. So if Carmel's trying to go inside against them, I think it could be rough. But if they're hitting outside shots, that could swing things in their favor.
Yeah, you talk about Marlon Taylor and Rylan Gundy and even Gabe Jackson.
Gabe Johnson.
Not only are they athletic, but they're also well-built. And one thing that does concern me about Carmel is in the game I saw last week against Homestead, John Michael Malloy struggled to finish inside against contact. And being guarded by 6'6", 6'1" kids who just kind of shoved him a little bit and really made it hard on him to establish great position. And he really struggled trying to finish inside. It's going to be that, but add a bunch more athleticism and about 4 or 5 more inches for the South Bend Riley interior defenders. So I think you're right there. If they try to play through John Michael Malloy on the block, that could kind of work against the Greyhounds. I think you got to use him as a change of pace from the guards.
Yeah, I think the thing I was trying to say there, Shark, is really like Riley will lose players, but then they make up for it by blocking shots at the rim. But if you lose guys on the perimeter, they don't really have that chance to swat shots around. So that's what I was kind of trying to get through there, Shark.
Yeah. We talk about Carmel hitting from the perimeter. If Riley can get Demezi Anderson going, I know he's had some up and down games in this tournament, but if he gets going, no shot is out of the question for him. Yeah. He's obviously one of the leading scorers in the state for a reason.
It's kind of funny you say that no shot's out of the question there. In the second half against Memorial, Riley got an offensive rebound, kicked it back to Demezi, who was about 2 feet behind the volleyball line. He thinks about it, pump fakes. The crowd basically goes, oh, and baits him into then rethinking it, and then he takes the shot after thinking about it for a second. He did miss it, but it kind of illustrates your point of if he crosses half court, he is in range.
Yeah. And then you have, you know, like the bigs we said, getting on the offensive glass. Is Jalen Jennings going to be able to create off the dribble against Cole Jenkins, Luke Hetty, Eddie Gill? You know, if he can get into the teeth of the defense and set up easy baskets inside, get some enthusiasm, some momentum, some excitement going. You know, the big plays, the dunks really seem to get Riley going.
Yeah, he hit 2 big threes late in the third quarter, I believe, against Memorial. Gave him some energy. And like you're saying, he creates a lot of the offense for him in the half court. And Trevor Fortune came off the bench for Riley, and he's kind of that same guy like Jennings creates and will hit an outside shot. So it'll be interesting to see how effective Jennings and Fortune are against this Carmel defense, because Carmel is not a team to let you slice and dice them there, Shark.
No. I think it's time we make our predictions. So who are we rolling with in 4A North, Trevor?
I don't know here, Shark. I'm going to go with Riley. It's kind of a scary pick for me because I don't know what type of performance I'm going to get out of them. But they are 26-0, so even though they've had some ups and downs, they've figured out ways to get it done. And I think they get some confidence after that regional final, being down 11, coming back and winning. I think that pushes them against Carmel, and they somehow get it done here, Shark.
I'm gonna take the Greyhounds in this one. I think they're able to control the pace so well, and I think that's going to frustrate Riley a lot. If they don't get a lot of possessions, you're going to see a lot of quick jacks from Riley, just trying to get the tempo in their favor. And I think that really plays into Carmel's hands because they're not going to get beat off the dribble a ton. They're a gang rebounding team. They're physical. They're tough. I think if you take quick shots against them, you're playing right into their hands because I don't think they're going to be turning the ball over much. So I'm going to take Carmel in this one. Close one. I do like Riley's ability, but I'm going to say Carmel's going to come out on top in this one.
Yep. And like you're saying, if they get frustrated, it won't be, I don't think, that Carmel's holding the ball, but Riley will gamble too much and get way out of position, and Carmel gets layups too often, and
yeah,
that does him in.
All right, let's head down to our last semi-state game. Think, Trevor, this is the one people have been looking forward to for most of the tournament. Undefeated 4A, number 1, Warren Central, sitting at 30-0, taking on number 2, New Albany, 25-1. The state's, what I'm going to go ahead and call the state's best defensive team in Warren Central, takes on a once-in-a-generation offensive talent in Romeo Langford.
Yeah, and these have been basically the one and two teams in the state since Christmas time. I mean, some people put Riley up there because they've been undefeated, but these are really the top two teams in the state. Like we've mentioned time and time again, with Warren Central's toughness and versatility, they play well together. They aren't guys that are really ego-driven, it doesn't seem like.
Very balanced.
Yeah, and I mean, you wouldn't think a city team like Warren Central would have 30-second possessions, but they'll work offense and work their flex for, you know, 10 or 15 passes on any given possession.
Yeah, and they don't beat themselves. They don't really turn the ball over. You see somebody like Jacoby Robinson, who is their fifth leading scorer on the team, really. He comes out and gets 17 in their regional championship game. And what they did to Terre Haute South was scary. I mean, they were up 24-4 in the first quarter.
I thought charges could have been filed there, Sean.
Yeah, yeah. That was definitely assault and battery there. You almost kind of saw a little playground defense from Warren Central just because they sensed that Terre Haute South was so shook. Dean Tate a few times just left his guy just to run and go at the ball handler because they sensed that they were so scared and they were going to turn it over. And the thing that I think is really interesting in this matchup, and obviously this is the main matchup, but when people play against Romeo Langford, it's what's your strategy on Romeo? How are you going to what are you going to do to slow him down? There's really no strategy for Warren Central in this game. They're going to do what they've always done, say, David Bell, here you go.
Yeah. And if Bell's not scoring, he can create for others. And he can create his own offense through defense, getting in the passing lanes. There's been multiple times where he'll have five or six steals in a game and totally change it that way.
Yeah. I mean, a normal line for him is 11 points, 7 boards, 5 assists, 3 steals, a block or two, and just always seeming to make the plays that need to be made for Warren Central.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be interesting because I would have to guess that David Bell gets a lot of time on Romeo Langford. What are your thoughts there, Shark?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of who else would guard him. Maybe you see Joe Rush at times. But I have to think, you know, this isn't a situation like regionals where there's two games in a day. You know, you have all week to rest, get ready for this. You're going to have a ton of scouting, ton of prep on this. So I think David Bell, unless he gets in foul trouble, it's going to be David Bell versus Romeo Langford for 32 minutes.
Yeah, and Bell's got that strength and competitiveness to really take that challenge. His football background, you know, high-level football guys aren't ones to back down usually, Shark.
No. And you talk about not backing down. You have an undersized but tough backcourt duo in Antoine Cushenberry and Dean Tate. Cush with the game-winning layup against Ben Davis in the regional semifinals. Dean Tate obviously can hit shots. A key for them is going to be able to hold down Sean East because, you know, we're just now getting to him. We've been talking about this game for a couple minutes, but Sean East is definitely a kid that can get hot from deep and beat you if you focus on Romeo too much.
Especially, like you were saying, you know, Tate and Cushenberry won't back down, but they're giving up, what, 5 or 6 inches maybe to Sean East?
I mean, you're looking at Tate and Cushenberry at 5'8", generously. East is 6 feet tall, so there's 4 right there, maybe 5 inches. And just at, like, we talked about Demezi Anderson shooting from deep, Romeo will shoot from deep. Sean East has volleyball line range as well, so
he was doing that as a sophomore when they won the state.
Have to find him in the half court, and even in transition, you know, if you go underneath the ball screen, he's liable to come up and pull from deep. He can get into the lane, really good float game.
Yeah.
And like you said, he was a starter on their state title team as a sophomore. He's been in these situations before. He's played in big games, so nothing is going to faze him, not even a great defensive backcourt like Warren Central has.
Yeah, just thinking out loud here, Shark. I was thinking Bell on Romeo, have Jacoby Robinson on Jalen Hunter, and kind of have
Julian Hunter.
Julian Hunter, what did I say?
Jalen.
That's right. But kind of have Jacoby shade towards Romeo at all times because, you know, Hunter won't be shooting from outside the lane. So just kind of have him shaded towards Romeo. So if he gets by Bell, you have size in Jacoby there.
Yeah. And Trey Horgan for New Albany, a sophomore, can hit shots, but he is only going to get a couple shots a game. Not a big offensive weapon. So I think Bingham and Robinson, the two front court players for Warren, can definitely try to make life difficult. And they're good enough defensively. If you use a ball screen, they can switch onto Romeo for at least a little bit and slide with him.
Yeah, they'll switch everybody, especially when you have Bingham and Robinson. They're just as big as Romeo, so they can get out there and get a hand in his face and at least force him off a easy three-pointer.
Yeah. Well, I think we've talked enough about this. We obviously like New Albany. We obviously like Warren Central, but only one team from this game is going to get a chance to play in the state finals, Trevor. Who's it going to be?
It's so tough since Warren got through Ben Davis and just annihilated Terre Haute South, but I'm going to go with New Albany. I think they have enough offensive firepower to score against Warren Central, and few teams are able to do that. And then I think also their defense is good enough. They have the athletes, not just East and Langford, but Julian Hunter and Derek Stevenson, and then obviously some size in Horrigan as well. So I'm taking New Albany here by a handful.
I don't even know whoever wins this game if it's going to be by a handful. This definitely seems like it's a game that can come down to the last minute or two. I think I'm going to have to go New Albany as well.
Turning your back on your...
I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. Sure. But Warren Central, I just think they've had so many close games. And if New Albany can get to 60... which I think they can, it's kind of hard for me to see Warren scoring 60 against New Albany with their defense. Romeo Langford completely shut down Kobe Barnes in the sectional title game, so is he going to be able to take away either a David Bell or a Jesse Bingham in the front court, depending on who he's matched up on? So I'm gonna take New Albany to win this one and move on to state.
All right, so basically we agree on 6 of the 8 there, Shark, with the two different ones being 2A North, where I go Oak Hill, you go Westview, and 4A North, where I go Riley, and you go Carmel.
Yeah, I think that's what we're going to roll with, Trevor. I think, obviously all these games are so tough to predict. Any one little thing can change the outcome of the game. A 5-0 run here or there can completely swing the outlook.
Yep. All right, that will wrap up our semi-state predictions there. All right, Shark, I wanted to get into Junior All-Stars because these teams were announced around this time last year, so wanted to get this out before that and kind of go into an interesting format here. Let's just go one by one of who we think should make the team in not exact order, but maybe a relatively in order projection here, Shark.
You want me to name off my team first?
No, let's just go one by one. Like
who my number one and who your number one is, yeah. And then kind of go on down?
Yeah.
All right, well, I think I'm going to go ahead and take Keon Brooks from Fort Wayne Northside is one that I think is going to be on here.
Yeah, I mean, you look at his first 3 years of high school have been pretty spectacular, Shark. Obviously, getting to the state championship game last year, getting the regional final this year, has just been able to do it all for Northside. He was my number one guy as well there, Shark.
My number two, somebody who could push Keon for Mr. Basketball next year, big man, Trace Jackson Davis from Center Grove.
Yeah, that's also my number two. Really came on this year, I think. Went to a different level, if you will, in these last 6 to 8 months. Maybe a little bit more than that over the summer last year. Then obviously led Center Grove to a great season. His game just continues to improve. That was my number two guy as well, Shark.
Number three, I have a feeling you might have the same number three as me, but I'm going to go Newcastle's Mason Gillis.
I don't. My number three was Isaiah Thompson from Zionsville.
Ooh!
Just his overall career, I think, has been a little bit better to this point. As a freshman, he scored like 20 a game for Zionsville. So, yeah, his role had to be bigger for Zionsville, and I'm just going to reward him for that right now. And I'll do my number four since you just said I have Gillis four. So,
All right. Well, we're just flipping spots because I have Isaiah as my number four as well. He's really come on the last couple weeks of the season, couple 40-point games, had big 26 points, tough baskets down the stretch against Northside in a regional loss.
Okay. And then I'll go with my number five guy. I went Armand Franklin from Cathedral. A guy that really stepped it up this year as a junior, took really made Cathedral into one of the top teams in 4A, doing it all from rebounding, defending, hitting shots. Really good on the offensive glass as well. So I'm going with him, number five there, Shark.
My number five is Brandon Newman from Valpo. I think he's a prototypical college two-guard prospect. He can shoot, he can rebound, he can defend, he's athletic, can put the ball on the floor. Was really asked to do a lot for Valpo this year and deliver. I think averaged around 25-9 for the season for a very good Valpo team that got upset in the regional semifinals. But he was my number five. And then for my sixth pick, I went with your number five pick, Armand Franklin of Cathedral.
Okay. Yeah, Newman, I put him down a little bit lower just because this was his first year of really being the man for Valpo and putting up huge counting stat numbers, if you will, Shark. But I do have him on my list, but just a little bit lower. My number six guy was Alex Hemingway from Castle. Been solid first 3 years. As a freshman, I went down and saw him at sectional score like 35. So, you know, he's been good since the start of his career. Had a little bit of a shooting slump this year. I think he got back on track towards the end of the year shooting-wise. But he was my number six guy there, Shark. And my, have you said your sixth guy yet?
Yeah, Armand was my number six. Okay. So I'll let you take number seven.
Yeah, seven was Newman for me, just a little bit lower. Who's your number seven, Shark?
My number seven is Alex Hemingway as well. Obviously, with the success Castle had getting to semi-state last year, he was obviously a big part of that. So he is my number seven pick. Again, having a great year this year. They lost so much from last year's team down at Castle. Obviously, Jack Nungy, big force. But Alex is going to be back next year, I think, great to take on an even bigger load. And he's going to be a kid that's going to put up some big numbers next year.
Yeah. And then my number eight was, I think this might throw you for a little loop here, Shark. I went Zach Kuhn for Shelbyville. Just he's not playing quite the competition of the guys that we've mentioned so far, but huge scoring, rebounding, shooting numbers. And I saw he had good assist numbers as well this year. I think he was at 4.5 or something like that. So doing a little bit of everything. And I think he's a little bit underrated from a college perspective just because he can shoot it so well at a 6'3", 6'4".
Well, I'm going to see your surprise number eight, Zach Kuhn, and I'm going to raise you because my number eight will probably never play 1 second of college basketball. I'm going with David Bell from Warren Central. He has done everything you could ask a player to do this year for Warren. Number one team, 30-0. He can score, pass, rebound, defend. I mean, literally everything you could ask on a kid to do on a basketball floor. He does it for Warren. Seems like he hits big shots every single game, whether he has 6 points or 16 points.
Yeah.
And he's been starting for Warren since really the end of his freshman year, I think, on basketball. Part of a MIC championship last year as a starter. So I'm going to go David Bell as my number eight. He's one of my favorite players to watch in the state just from the energy and competitiveness he plays with every time out.
Yeah, I think the only argument about Bell is he doesn't put up those huge numbers that, you know, most Indiana All-Stars or Junior All-Stars put up. But you can't argue against the winning that Warren Central has done the last 2 years. And Bell is obviously a huge reason for that success. So. Mm-hmm. Can't argue with you too much. He did not make my list there, Shark, but I don't hate your pick.
All right. My number nine, we're going to stay in the mix here and go John Michael Malloy of Carmel.
That's my exact number nine there, Shark. I went with the Butler-bound power forward. I think he kind of gets a bad rap because you expect him to do so much. Your expectations are so high. But the way he can pass the ball, Carmel likes to play through him a lot on the perimeter. He won't go through double teams because he is such a good passer. Sometimes you just hope he would just go through and finish, but his passing ability is really good, especially with the shooters around him at Carmel. Really sets those guys up well.
Yeah, and I think one thing you're not going to ever question from Malloy is the effort every single night. He's always, even though he doesn't always get the ball on the block, not through any fault of his own, but he's always willing to post hard. He draws so many fouls on the opposing team's front line, and he's a 75 to 80% free throw shooter. Really nice stroke from there. I wish he would take a few more mid-range jumpers a game, because I think he's got a really good touch out there. But he's somebody who will rebound in traffic. Obviously, good size at 6'9". He's a kid who definitely, I think, is good now, but will have his best basketball ahead of him.
Well, like you're saying, you wish he would shoot more from the outside. I think that's where his role will be in college. On the perimeter, you know, the pick and pop type of shots, just letting him kind of play through him on the perimeter as well, like I was talking about before with his passing ability. I think he'll be most productive stretching the floor from that power forward position.
All right. We both had the same number 9. I don't know if we're going to have the same number 10 because I took Luke Bumbalo of Newcastle.
Close there, Shark. I went Bumbalo 11. Obviously, Bumbalo having a great season for Newcastle. Elite type of shooter. I think that's really gone from being average to good three-point shooter for him and then take that next step this year.
And he's so dangerous because he can shoot very accurately off the dribble. It's not uncommon for him to shoot off ball screens, to pull up in transition from three. He gets great elevation for a kid that's only about 6 feet tall.
I would give him 5'10", Shark. That's, well, 6 feet, what, is he wearing heels there?
Well, he's a little bit taller than me, so.
I don't know about that, Shark.
So I'll give him 6 foot on a good day, but really can shoot it. Really good quickness.
Shark going with program heights over there.
Knows how to finish at the rim. Very quick off the dribble, and has obviously won a lot of games. Played as a freshman, started as a sophomore. Now here as a junior, him and Gellis, definitely one of the best 1-2 punches in the state.
Yep, and then I'll come back for my number 10. A guy who won a state title last year, Shark, Jalen Windham, the shooter from Ben Davis. Not as consistent of a scorer as a lot of these other guys, but really efficient, really probably one of the best shooters in the class for Indiana. Good size, a solid 6'4". I like his production so far, and then obviously next year he's going to have to take that to a new level with Aaron Henry being gone.
Yeah, Jalen was my number 11 pick. I remember the first time I watched him play and I saw him. I was watching a Ben Davis game at Fisher's, and he was playing JV as a freshman, and he just kept raining three after three after three. I think he had 6 threes in the second half of a JV game, and I'm half tempted to go in and yell at Mark James asking why this kid wasn't on varsity. But he comes in.
I'm sure there were a few parents asking that question.
Yeah, but then you know, I think that's preparing him for a bigger role because, like you said, he had a huge role in their team. I think led them in scoring in the state championship game last year.
Yeah.
So I obviously love him. One of the better shooters in the class. Got really good length, good frame on him. Has been part of a lot of wins over there on the west side.
Yeah. And just going from a projection side, you think he's going to get better conditioning going moving forward here too. Maybe that helps his athleticism take a step forward, and his could really excel when he gets to college.
Definitely. My number 12 is a kid who has his ups and downs, but I think when he's focused and playing well, there's few people who are as tough of a cover as Aaron Etherington from Hamilton Southeastern.
Okay. I was trying to think of who you were going with there, Shark. I think a handful of players might have fit that description of what you're going with there, though. But yeah, Aaron, obviously a lot of talent, does a little bit of everything for Hamilton Southeastern, scoring inside, outside, good size, a solid 6'5", might be able to give him 6'6", I don't know. If you're giving Bumbalo 6 foot, then I might have to give him 6'7", like he's listed in the program, Shark. But yeah, I went Aaron at 13, so he would make the cut for the our hypothetical 13-man junior all-star team. But my 12 was another shooter. I think I like the shooter, Shark. Jared Hankins from Lawrence North. kind of like Wyndham, where not the most consistent output, but a lot of big games from him this year for Lawrence North. A lot of, I think, first six or seven times I saw Lawrence North this year, Hankins had more than 20 points and shot over 50% from three in those games. So a guy who can really light it up in a hurry.
Okay. For my number 13, I went all the way down to Southern Indiana, picked up a kid who's one of the more versatile pieces on one of the better teams in the state with Kobe Barnes at Floyd Central.
Yeah, I went him 14. These last few guys, I mean, it's really pick a name out of a hat, I think.
Yeah.
Really a deep class here, Shark. Guys that have produced for the first couple years of their high school careers. And you can definitely make a case for Barnes. Just he's been productive in his first 3 years, and each year he's been better and better.
Yeah, and obviously he defends, he can score at the rim, he can shoot a little bit if you leave him open, and it's hard to argue with Floyd Central's success this year.
All right. Who was your 14th?
My 14th was somebody you've already named, but a kid that I really enjoy watching, Shelbyville's Zach Kuhn.
Okay.
Really good rebounder from the wing position, can obviously shoot at good size, 6'3", 6'4". I think he's a kid that is going to be able to develop an off-the-dribble game off his shot face. He's got a really good pull-up already. But he's a kid that from day one was asked to carry a lot of the load at Shelbyville. And this year averaging 20-9 for a really good Shelbyville team. He's a kid that I think will definitely turn some heads this spring and summer on the AAU circuit. And going into next year, they should have a really talented team with him and Josh Williams at the guard spot. So Zach Kuhn was my number 14 pick.
All right. We just went with 14 guys. We're not doing the 24-man roster that I believe they're going with this year for the junior all-stars. Who are some of the guys right on the fringe there for you, Shark?
One of them that made your team that I kept off just because and it's nothing that really to go against him. Jared Hankins was a tough cut for me. I know you said you've seen him play really well. The couple of Lawrence North, I think I've been to three Lawrence North games this year. He's struggled in those games. So obviously, like you said, consistency was something to go on for Jared. And then I went Sam DeVault down at Evansville. I think he's a kid that not a lot of people know about right now, but a consistent producer down
really
there.
Good efficiency. He doesn't have that pure aggressiveness or scoring mentality.
The eye-popping numbers.
Yeah, where he's going to take a ton of shots. He's taking good shots, and he makes them at a high rate, but that kind of keeps his overall numbers down a little bit. I agree. I would Sam DeVault's right on the edge for me. A lot of
Who did
Southern,
you say your 14 was?
Kobe Barnes.
Okay.
I don't know if I said it or not. But I think it did. A lot of the Southern Indiana guys were right on that edge for me. Sam DeVault, Paxton Bartley from Wood Memorial, Logan Carter from Evansville Modern Day. I think those guys are right there. I think you could pick any of the Warren Central juniors, David Bell, Jacoby Robinson, Jesse Bingham, just because they are so versatile. I know David made your team, but I really like Jacoby Robinson. I think he was, their fifth leading scorer or something like that.
Yeah, but he was there. He had 17 at team high, and there went over Terre Haute South.
But I just like the way he rebounds and passes the ball for a 6'5", 6'6 guy.
Yeah, some of the other kids I thought about going back up to Fort Wayne, Craig Young, the man-child up there, one of the best pure athletes in the state. Inside at 6'5", about 210, 215 or so. Just a freakish second jump. He's a load to handle inside. Cam Alford from Brownsburg, one of the better scoring guards in the Central Indiana area. A kid that's probably a consistent three-point shot away from just being nasty at the high school level with his physicality, his ability to get to the basket.
Yeah, he took over the last game I saw him play when he went against Center Grove. Just lit up the scoreboard and very short time frame there. A guy similar to him, Noah Smith from Hamilton Southeastern. More of a defensive-minded guy, pass first, slash to the basket type of guy. Another guy that if he starts knocking down outside shots, I think his game goes to a new level.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Noah's less of a scorer than Cam is, but more of a setup guy, like you said, defender. Physically, he's got all the tools to be a great defender at the college level because he's big, he's strong, he can move well laterally. He's got good anticipation. He's a kid that's definitely one to keep an eye on there. He and Etherington form a nice junior class for HSC.
Yeah. And a couple other guys that were tough to leave off. Jalen Johnson from Manual. Good. He's starting to add that outside shot that we were talking about for the other guys. Good rebounder, mainly a inside finisher right now for Manual, but a good prospect. And Colin Kenny, I just saw him from Michigan City Marquette, well over 1,000 points as a junior. So obviously a very good scorer, one of the top shooters, I would say, in the state. I think he was 48-49% on a very high volume as a junior. And then obviously the Logansport duo of Sam Skaggs and Will Penny. Thought either one of those would have an outside chance of making it.
Yeah.
Just don't think they've played a tough enough schedule to really get on this list at this point, Shark.
Yeah, I think that's a really good list. I mean, there are a lot of kids. We obviously have our about 6-7 locks of people. We kind of our top sevens mirrored each other.
Yeah.
But like you said, this kind of 8 through 18 range in the class really is just a flavor of the month type deal. Whatever you kind of want, you're able to find it in this class.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. I know a lot of times for the senior all-stars, they try to make a real team of bigs and guards and stuff like that. So if they do that with the junior team, I think you would see more of the Sam Duvalds, Jalen Johnsons, Logan Carter, those guys have a better chance than just taking the top 14.
Because after Trace and John Michael Malloy, really that's it on the interior until you get down to, like you said, the Logan Carters and Sam DeVaults of the world. A lot of depth, I think, in the wings in this class. You look down at our list, very wing heavy. I think there's a lot of talent at the 2 and 3 spots here in 2019.
Yeah. You're talking about wings, and we haven't even mentioned guys like David Aja from Carroll, who's really good. Mm-hmm. Ali from up that way as well at East Noble. Nate Soltis for Ritter. Elijah Hale's more of a guard, but, you know, really good. Drew Comer had a huge year for Greensburg. Luke Richardson was dominant in the postseason for LaPel.
Yeah. And even you look at somebody like a Caden Key at a 6-1 kind of wing for Frank at the 2A level. Maybe not everything will translate to a high level in college, but in terms of high school production, man, it's hard to argue with what he's done at Frank.
Yeah, obviously a state title last year for Key, and then a really good year other than falling short in postseason play there, Shark. But, yeah, I mean, really good overall class, I think. A lot of depth. And going forward, I mean, a lot of these guys project as really good D2 and NAIA type of players.
Yeah, somebody I like again in the 2019 class for the Crossroads League Division II levels, Nate Ayrts from Valpo, 6'6 combo forward that was the second man behind Newman this year. He's a kid that can do just a lot of different things. I was really impressed a couple times I saw him play this year.
Yeah, so it'd definitely be interesting to see kind of how they pick these teams, since you're having a core team like Normal, a North team like Normal, South team like Normal, but now they throw 6 more Central guys in this year as well, Shark.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, you know.
I think it's a little overkill myself there, Shark.
Yeah, I mean,
24 guys? I mean, come on now. They're nice players, but do you really need the label of junior in all-star if you're naming 24 guys?
Would have been nice for us back in the day, but neither of us would have made the 24.
No, not even close. But
I mean, I think, especially with how they're condensing the all-star schedule, I know they've had problems with kids going off to college. If you're not giving all these kids a chance to play in a game, then what's the point, really? Like, I know they're doing a game against Kentucky Junior All-Stars. Just name, like we're doing right now. I hate to say we have the best idea, but name 12.
I don't think you've ever hated to say you had the best idea, Shark.
Well, this was your idea when we talked about how we were going to do this.
Well, then, this is a different story.
But name 12 or 14 guys, have them play one game against the seniors and one game against Kentucky, and that be it.
Yeah, I think that would be good. I mean, at some point down the road, I think you just do junior versus senior 2 times, and that'd be the whole series, I think.
Yeah.
The Indiana-Kentucky thing is on its last legs here, Shark.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I like the junior-senior games better than the Indiana versus Kentucky anyway. I think they're more competitive, and you get to see the young guys. They have something really to play for. They're trying to prove they're better than those older. You know, the older brother is playing the younger brother.
And especially when, you know, the couple of years that, you know, the juniors do beat the seniors, that's something that the seniors, especially if the juniors beat them in the first game, the seniors are out for blood in that second game because they're not going to be the class that got swept by the juniors.
Yeah. Yep. So we'll see what ends up happening, but hopefully someday they follow our lead here, Shark.
We're only throwing out high-quality ideas here, Trevor, in the Shark Tank.
That's what the Shark Tank's for.
Oh, you know it.
All right. Well, I think that wraps things up. Thank you again, Shark, for having us at the Shark Tank.
Always a pleasure to have you stop by here, Trevor.
All right. Next week, we'll obviously do our state predictions, and I think we'll move on to the Indiana All-Star team as well.
That sounds good. Trevor will also be conceding defeat in our predictions matchup here next weekend.
I don't think that's even possible, Shark.
Well, we shall see. But
all right. I think that'll do it. Catch us next time on the Indiana Basketball Source Podcast.